You're listening to Air Schooner, listening that moves you. Hosted by Stacy Waite and Scott Winter.
Poetry and music are intertwined for me in a big way in terms of growing up. When rock and roll, I feel like, really saved my life, you know, it was a pathway to another world that I didn't know about yet, but I could feel it, and I could listen to it, and I could carry my transistor radio around in the 50s, and it was a lifeline before I knew how to make poetry my lifeline. And then later they just started to work together. But I feel like it's that same, you know, trap door to desire and sensuality and open road and everywhere I want to go.
He's Scott Winter.
And she's Stacy Waite. You're listening to Air Schooner, and that was poet Jan Beatty, who visited the University of Nebraska-Lincoln a few weeks ago. Jan Beatty's latest book, Red Sugar, was published by the University of Pittsburgh Press and was a finalist for the 2009 Patterson Poetry Prize. Other books include Bone Shaker, Mad River, which won the 1994 Agnes Lynch Starrett Prize, and a limited edition chapbook, Ravenous, winner of the 1995 State Street Prize. For the past 18 years, Beatty has hosted and produced Prosody, a public radio show on NPR affiliate WYEP-FM, featuring the work of national writers. Beatty directs the creative writing program at Carleton University, where she runs the Mad Women in the Attic writing workshops and teaches in the MFA program. Stacy had the opportunity to talk with Beatty here in the Air Schooner studios about poetry and music and Beatty's love of rock and roll.
Have you ever said to a student, you need to go home and you need to listen to this Pink Floyd album? Have you ever said anything like that?
Oh, yeah. Well, I've brought music into class. And I've taught this workshop called Rock and Roll as Muse. And I taught that at Frostburg State one time. I've taught it a couple times. And I use some Hendrix, some AC/DC. And I bring in some poems that to me feel like they have a similar sensibility. And we talk about, you know, where do you see, where do you feel the pounding, where do you feel the release in the poem, where do you feel it, you know, where are you most invested in the song? And it's kind of cool to talk about them in tandem. So, yeah. And I'm teaching a class now called Poetry Out Loud. We're using how to use a mic, but, you know, how to get up there and feel the music in your body, feel the music of the poem, which is so important. So, I think it's a big part of my teaching.
So you're teaching poets how to be the rock stars they really want to be.
That's right. That's right. Whether they want to or not.
My father once told me that all good teachers were failed rock stars, and sometimes I think also all good poets are also failed rock stars. It's like, I really wanted to be something. Did you ever want to be a rock star?
Oh yeah, man. I think I am a rock star in my head. But I had a bunch of guitars. I took lessons for like 5 years. I would practice all day. My friend Patty would come over. We would sing all these songs. But I just wasn't progressing. I just wasn't very good. You know, so I married a rock star. You know, my husband is a great guitar player. He plays blues guitar. And so we have guitars all over the house. So it kind of works.
So what do you think of that, Scott? Do you think you're a failed rock star or what?
Yeah, you're right. All teachers are failed rock stars or failed comedians. And, man, it's about time we get AC/DC into the program. Thanks to Jan Beatty. I had to review a concert when I was in high school for the local paper. And, man, all I basically wrote about was how that concert blew my eardrums out.
Yeah, growing up on Long Island in the 80s, AC/DC was where it was at, man. I had this great T-shirt and everything. It was great. Jan Beatty mentioned her rock star husband, and she offered to read me a poem about him called Love Poem in Strap.
My baby's got a solid body guitar, rocks it hard like dinosaurs eating cars, plays it dirty like worlds exploding, like Stevie Ray's battered Strat, Badlands sticker on the back. He's got a fever for the steamroller, like Hendrix on Voodoo Child, like Jeff Beck avalanching notes into air. My baby's a gunslinger, plays his guitar rock hard. He likes it old style, he likes it muddy, likes it Elmore James, bends it crazy on his 62 reissue Arctic White Strat, and his head rolls back to that precise pain, that one note screaming, his mouth twisted open and the light crossing his face like a freight train passing. My baby's a gunslinger, plays his guitar rock hard. He likes it Freddie King, whole body vibrato, likes it Howlin' Wolf. My baby plays its strings against the mic stand dirty, twists the body to the Hubert Sumlin script, screams through his Fender Vibro King. He's got a hard-on for traditional screw special effects, screw overplay. He's got love for his whammy bar, got love for his double cutaway fins, jams his headstock into the air, rips a hole in the sky with his song.
Man, you can really feel that connection that she's making between rock and roll and desire. I mean, that's why we listen to music when we eat breakfast, when we take a shower, when we make love, you know, all the time. I can really, you know, hear it in those words.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's why they call Jan Beatty the rock star poet, you know. You listen to that poem and you feel like writing poetry, you feel like listening to music, you feel like making love. That's what Jan Beatty's all about.
Yeah, even when I was a little kid, it was all about Stevie Nicks and Debbie Harry of Blondie, and it was definitely about Natalie Merchant as I got older.
Natalie Merchant, really, Scott? All right, yeah, I dig it. Well, I was growing up, I was obsessed with Michael Jackson, just really obsessed with Michael Jackson. Everything he sang, everything he did, and I had the opportunity to meet the poet Thomas Sayers Ellis when I was in Chicago and talk with him a little bit about his Michael Jackson poetry and about Michael Jackson.
From Gone Pop. White skin, black surgical mask. That period when Michael Jackson was sort of in self-exile and hiding from the public, hiding his face in the face of his children while he traveled. We are the world, but what we are we? If a body gifted too many gods, black versus white, male versus female, locks itself in infinite surgery, wellness versus wealth, the operating tables of pop, pharmacies nearby, remastered, panic attacks, dance floor blood, every track, for recovery, slash, for vitiligo, makeup, translucence, the cellophane glow of pigment, incognito, dermatology versus nutrition, if race a transvestite, then penis a Dalmatian, prescribed protection, the light green latex of bedtime fantasy, straight on till the nomadic black fashions of mourning. Children don't heal when hidden in the damaged lungs of mileage. Bahrain to Ireland, Ireland to the platinum triangle, paradise sequins, saturates, platelet and palette. But all brown boys except one stayed black. The rest, left alone, can wait.
That poem is from Thomas Sayers Ellis' latest book, Skin Ink. Thomas Sayers Ellis co-founded the Dark Room Collective in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and received his MFA from Brown University. He is the author of the award-winning book, The Maverick Room. His poems and photographs have appeared in numerous journals and anthologies, including Callaloo, Best American Poetry, Tin House, and The Nation. He is also an assistant professor of writing at Sarah Lawrence College, a faculty member of the Lesley University Low Residency MFA program, and serves on the faculty at Cave Canem, an organization committed to cultivating the artistic and professional growth of African American poets. I got the chance to talk to Ellis quite a bit about that poem he just shared. And here's a little bit of our conversation.
I don't know that I was a Michael Jackson fan, but I do know that I watched, in addition to a great talent from when he was a boy, I saw them twice as the Jackson 5 and once as the Jacksons. I did watch what I would call a live, almost like a live suicide or a live autopsy or whatever happened in the pilgrimage from Soul Child Star to Pop Monstrosity, or whatever you want to call it. And I was affected by it. I wasn't an adult Michael Jackson fan. I mean, I could say the most that he made me feel in the envy category was that I wanted brothers that I could dance with and dress up with when I was a kid, and I only had one brother. So it would have been nice to, Mom, could we have four more? You know. But there seemed to always be, in the music, a certain amount of paranoia after he was a pop star, and a certain amount of autopsy, taking the self apart. And then when you deal with the cult of celebrity in poetry and, you know, how one observes transformation, it's just a fascinating narrative. It's a narrative that crosses and combines issues of identity, health, gender, you know, exploitation, greed. It's all there, you know. I mean, it's just all there, and I don't think there's ever going to be a final word on that mask, you know. I love the stories about him, like they built a wooden box for him in the studio when he was making Thriller. And Billie Jean, the song, was first called Sonic Personality. And he would get in the box with the little hole in the microphone sticking through it in the dark and perform. He referred to that part of the song as the jelly. And he would always say, give me the jelly. And they would start playing it, and he would go for it. I love the story of how he wore his mother's jacket on stage for the Motown 25 famous moonwalk to make his dad mad. That's his mother's jacket. His arms are too long. His sequin. That became a famous look. So, I mean, there's just like a lot of modern folklore and odd mythic he say, she say around the idea of him, and that one can work a worry around a poetic line, a poetic stanza. Poem's excessive. It's meant to be, and I don't try to make a tight, restrained line or stuff in a few places. But, I mean, wow. Gary, Indiana. An industry town, you know. It's just amazing, you know.
So, Scott, something really stay with you after listening to that?
Well, it really makes me want to stop and just think and think and think. And it really reminds me of the power of the writer, the power of the poet to put things in perspective for us. You know, I think about how I've talked about Michael Jackson's death, and then I think about how Thomas Ayers Ellis just put it in perspective for me. It's good.
Yeah, and those great stories, he has some great stories there that I hadn't heard about Michael Jackson, that Billie Jean was called Sonic Personality.
Yeah,
amazing.
Jelly? Come on.
That's amazing.
Prairie Schooner has launched its new website. Visit prairieschooner.unl.edu to find the new website's features, such as Air Schooner, Prairie Schooner's literary podcast, and the Poetry News and Review column. Read sample writings from the new issue and browse older archived work in the From the Vaults section. Find new electronic submission guidelines for the annual Prairie Schooner Book Prize in fiction and poetry, and even buy a Prairie Schooner t-shirt.
That's our music episode for today. Thanks, as always, for listening to Air Schooner.
And please join us again in 2 weeks when we'll be talking about food.
Air Schooner is a biweekly product of Prairie Schooner and produced with research support from Robert Fugli, Ted Wheeler, and Marianne Kunkel. Production assistants are Catherine Larson and Franny Sprouls. Technical support comes from Rick Alloway of the University of Nebraska-Lincoln's College of Journalism and Mass Communications. Air Schooner is produced by Scott Winter and the brainchild of executive producer Kwame Dawes.